Welcome to another edition of the Beer Pinions podcast, live taped live here at Kaiser Tiger in the West Loop in Chicago, Illinois. My name is Pat Berger, one of the owners here at Kaiser Tiger, Patty Longs, and with me, as always, is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Bruce, how you doing?
Doing well, man. Celebrating Chicago Craft Beer Week. A lot of great events. I know you guys are having a great event here tonight. Probably too late for the podcast listeners, but that's why you got to follow both of us on our social medias, right?
Yes, tonight is the last night of Chicago Craft Beer Week, and my liver is ready for it to be over.
Yeah.
It's always a marathon of events, drinking, fun, seeing people you haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
You know? It's always a good time. But I'm happy for it to be over.
Yeah, I did the, I think you guys had counter programming at Patty Long's that night, but I went to Beer Under Glass, which kicks off the week.
We did. We had beer under tin.
Yeah, I know. And I was very jealous because I did want to, but I maxed out at Beer Under Glass before I made it.
It was a wonderful event. Our good friends at Metropolitan and Off Color Brewery, we do this event every year, and it consists of a contest, a 2-liter boot race of beer, obviously, and you know, Metropolitan for the second year in a row cheated. I'm just gonna say it.
You heard
they
it here
cheated.
First. Okay.
They claimed victory, and with half of the beer on the floor and the other half on one of their participants' shirts, Logan. Calling out Logan. So, you know, we lost by half a second, but my shirt was dry, as were my competitors. The same cannot be said of the Metropolitan team. But hey, they wear it well. I'm not bitter or anything. I'm very bitter. And, you know, congratulations to them. I hate them. But on to the end of Craft Beer Week. We will have our final event here tonight at Kaiser. It's the Southside Breweries, an event that, frankly, a couple years ago would have been impossible.
Right.
There would have been no breweries to attend, and now we have 20 different Southside breweries attending this event, and there are many others beyond that. So it's gonna be Southside night. I expect fights and
a lot of Sox fans,
a lot of Sox gear, and it's gonna be a great time. Wonderful people, and really making some fantastic beer on the South Side.
Yeah, and I think it's neat because I believe when the craft beer events this year came out, it really kind of solidified how much the beer scene has grown and matured here in Chicago. And I think the easiest way for me to kind of start keeping track of all of the breweries is really geographically grouping them. So you guys had the South Side. There have been some North, kind of like Cicerone did like a Brown Line kind of brewery event, breweries off the Brown Line, and so
I think you could do one just with breweries on Ravenswood Avenue.
Yeah, the neighborhood's naming that Malt Row. They kind of, it's six breweries and a distillery right there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's really cool. And there's some really good ones there too.
No doubt.
Yeah,
no doubt.
So that's awesome. Well, congrats with the events, and looking forward to tonight. Should be a good way to cap the week.
Yes, absolutely agreed. So we don't have a guest this week.
Yeah,
we can't get our shit together.
Pat gets all the guests, so it's my fault. I've contributed no guests.
Well, I can't get my shit together. It's been craft beer week for fuck's sake. Let's just be happy I'm here and alive.
This is a good thing,
right? But we had to get together and do a podcast. Yeah. There's been a lot going on in the brewing world lately, and you know, the internet is freaking out, as it likes to do.
Yeah, I mean, people panic, and it's fun. I panic too sometimes, and it's just fun to be a part of it.
Sometimes it's god awful.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about? Of course, we're talking about the selling of microbreweries to the big guys, which is happening at a rapid clip and a pretty shocking one this past week with Wicked Weed Brewery out of Asheville, North Carolina, who I just got to visit very, very recently.
Right before the acquisition, right?
Right before the acquisition. I was out there with Sierra Nevada, and I dragged my business partner, Chris, who not a beer guy. But one night I was like, well, we have to go see Wicked Weed. You know, everyone talks about Wicked Weed. I have to drink their beer. We have to go there. And it was, you know, after one beer, Chris was like, let's go. There's no scene here. Nothing's happening. Let's get out of here. And so we did. And we went to a dive bar, which in all fairness was rocking, and we had a blast. But, you know, just like that, they went from this highly sought after brewery that I just had to check out to everyone hating their guts.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that they're one of those breweries that I had heard about, even though they weren't distributed even remotely near Illinois yet at the time. It's one of those breweries that was just became.
They will be soon.
They will be soon. That's very true.
Never had them, Bruce. You will soon. Yeah.
And but man, I tell you, so I think that was one of the reasons why it was so surprising, is because it had become one of these hot breweries that was brewing, that beer nerds liked. It wasn't just hot for...
Right. I mean, not just that. They had this reputation as, you know, I mean, it's Asheville, right? They were the kings of the Asheville brewing scene, and Asheville might be the king of the American craft brewing scene right now. There are so many breweries there for such a small town. And Wicked Weed was at the forefront of all of that. They make a lot of what's popular with the nerds right now, which is sour beers and hoppy beers. And, you know, they had this hippie, you know, vibe going on. I mean, the whole town does. They had a they had a fucking drum circle, which apparently they have every Friday night in downtown Asheville. I mean, God bless them. You know, wonderful people. But when you're from Chicago, you're like, what the fuck's going on down here?
It's also weird that it's North Carolina. Like, that just strikes me as odd that is like this kind of little new, this place of like hippie culture there.
Yeah.
Not to pick on North Carolina.
No,
but, you know.
No. They're not just hugging trees there. I think they actually are marrying them. There's actual intercourse with the trees. But, you know, it's a cool little town. I'm making fun of it, but it was, we had a blast there. It's a great little town, and any beer enthusiast should go check it out. People flipped out, and it also happened, a couple of weeks before their big funk festival that is, you know, a mecca for nerds and for beer enthusiasts to try all these hip, cool, cult beers. And apparently a lot of those breweries pulled out after the announcement, you know, because their philosophies did not align with going to a festival that is essentially now owned and run by Anheuser-Busch InBev.
Right. And the money goes to those corporate coffers. And
well, technically that money was going to a charity. But hey,
okay, right.
Don't let filth philosophy get in the way of helping a charity. Now, in fairness, some of those breweries that pulled out just went ahead and wrote a check to the charity. So, you know, you have to stick by your guns, whatever you believe, I suppose. And, you know, if you are a small independent craft brewer and that's what you believe in, then you don't want to be associated with that festival. That's, you know, that's everyone's right. So, but the waves are still, you know, reverberating on this sale, and all of these sales are controversial, right? And, you know, we went through it with Goose Island here. That seems like a decade ago.
Eternity, right.
Right. But I don't know, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago?
2011, 2000.
Well,
yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that was shocking to all of us to some degree. But at the same time, Goose Island was a very corporately run brewery that, you know, that they did not have a hippie vibe, that sold out to a big corporation and, you know, wasn't quite as shocking as some of these other ones. Also in the news, you know, Lagunitas sold their other half. So they had sold 50% to Heineken and sold the other 50%, I think, the day after I heard about Wicked Weed anyway. It was very smart timing on their part.
I was like, whoever the PR people are for Heineken and Lagunitas, they need a little bit of a raise, because they could not have timed that better.
I mean, that on top of the fact that, you know, they already sold the other, you know, they sold 50% to Heineken a few years ago. So to me, my Lagunitas rep, who I love to death, Matt Bentley, shout out to Matt. He came by the next day to Patty Long's and he came in and he sat down. He's like, so, you know, what questions do you have? I'm like, my first question is, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, and he's like, you know, the sale, man. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. You guys sold the other, you know. So it wasn't that big of a deal, I think. You know, it was a big deal when the initial deal went down 2 years ago or however long it's been. But it is, you know, I think the consequences of this are as big as they've ever been, right?
Right. And I think, too, the other thing about Lagunitas is they aren't some small startup craft brewery at this point.
That's for sure. Like, but they did have the hippie vibe.
They
and,
did,
you know,
for sure.
Tony McGee, the founder, owner of former owner of Lagunitas. You know, he did shoot himself in the foot with a whole bunch of tweets over the last 10 years about, you know, how, you know, building this whole mystique of the hippie stoner brewery that, you know, will never bow down to Anheuser-Busch and all the rest of it, you know.
But will the Heineken.
Yes. So the moral there is keep your fucking mouth shut, right? Well, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what you're going to do.
He did write a blog post about the sale. And it was one of the stranger.
Yeah, I got through about half.
Yeah, and he compared it to going into the whale in was it Pinocchio? Is that or no? I don't remember.
It made about as much sense as the Unabomber manifesto.
And then the other funny thing that I thought was funny was somebody tweeted out, "Does this mean all the Lagunitas employees are going to be drug tested?"
I can tell you from experience. They are not.
They might be hiring soon. Look for.
I
those.
Mean, remember, Heineken is a you know based out of Amsterdam.
Yeah, so they should be hopefully. Yeah, maybe a little more. So, this is the 420. The people who make the 420 ale.
Don't. They're not allowed to use 420 anymore. Sweetwater makes the 420 ale.
Because it's the highway, right? That's how they get around it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
That was another lawsuit that, you know, another time Tony put his foot in his mouth. He got all upset because he got a cease and desist on 420 from Sweetwater. And then he sent a cease and desist to Sierra Nevada about IPA. So, you know, once again, Tony, you know, he's like, it's like Trump, you know, they got to send someone in and take his phone away and cancel his Twitter account. That's all it does is shoot him in the foot.
Oh man!
But other than that, I don't think there's anything similar to Trump with Tony. Yeah, but with the Twitter, you know, there's some similarities there. Yeah. So,
but you're right. I think the stakes. It just shows you the stakes because now you're starting to get. I mean, the Heineken sale, the Lagunitas sale. All of a sudden, you have another gigantic, what was kind of a high quality, I don't want to use the term craft brewer necessarily anymore, but high quality brewer that is, and we can debate that.
Incredibly high quality and still a great beer, and and Lagunitas still tastes great.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no question about that.
And just like any other business, you're going to get that infusion of resources that were not necessarily available, although Lagunitas was already quite large and successful, and the consequences of that can have far-reaching impacts.
Like drinking a Lagunitas IPA in China.
Yep.
Which, you know, that's going to happen.
For sure.
It's also going to happen in Mexico and Central America and South America. And
Europe.
You know, it's going to be a worldwide brand.
Right.
And
you'll probably have it next to the Goose Island Shanghai Brew Pub.
Exactly.
Which I believe is already
you
open.
You can drink Goose
there.
Island in Asia.
Yep. So, you know, consequences worldwide. In the U.S., it's always, this is a long debate, but there are consequences here as well.
There are many, you know, nothing is black and white, and this is a very complicated issue. And, there was a very good article that came out in Good Beer Hunting, who I think we'll probably get to later in the conversation as well. But they had an article that was almost, I had to read it a few times, I'll be honest. It's called Watch What the Hands Watch the Hands, Not the Cards, The Magic of Mega Brew, and it was written by the founder of Creature Comforts. His name is Chris Heron. Maybe, you know, this is your time to shine here, Bruce, and maybe explain what Chris Heron was saying, because like I said, I read it a couple of times, and it started to go in one ear and out the other because I'm not very smart.
Yeah, I think that he kind of started off by no, I don't. I mean, I'll do my best here, but man, oh man, no, this is but basically he was saying, you know, the value of a brand. There's when you look at, like, if you ever have a Fortune 500 company and you look at kind of what their assets are, one of those assets is goodwill, or these kind of this intangible value of a brand. And he was basically saying that and it's important when you're at a size of an Anheuser-Busch that it's such a gigantic number. You know, Disney, McDonald's, any
and
large.
It's a group. Real, like, it's a number on their sheet, right? On their profit loss report, on their, I don't know, on their valuation.
Yeah, it's a valuation, and it's on their, it's, it wouldn't be like a profit loss. It's more of like an intangible asset. So, I mean, this is me, by the way, taking my college accounting. So I'm probably totally wrong on this.
Well, you took accounting. I never but, I went to a liberal arts school.
but you know, it's a big number. And if you can, if something changes in the business, for example, you know, if there was a,
it's like Chipotle. Like, was it Chipotle who had the E. coli outbreak or something, and suddenly they were worth nothing?
Yeah, and your brand, you can have these impairment charges. So, like, this happens a lot of times when tech companies are bought. Like, all of a sudden, you buy a tech company and it's for $4 billion, and then it's really worth nothing. And then you're like, oh, crap. And you were buying that tech company.
Because right. All you got was a room full of laptops.
Yeah. And the app, you know, the next, you know, who knows. But and then so you have to write that off of your books because you paid that. But then and it kind of goes into this intangible asset category. So his argument was that basically, you know, it's one of his first points was Anheuser-Busch has to make sure that its brand equity is high. And because of the falling sales of its core brands like Budweiser, that, you know, he was going through stats that a lot of young people don't even try one when they're young. Whereas it used to be that you at least would try it when you were growing up.
First beer I ever got drunk on.
Yeah.
Budweiser.
And then they're going to have to kind of make moves to increase brand equity otherwise. I think it was kind of a long, obtuse way of saying, they still have to be very, very protect their shield. They have to protect their brands.
Right. And the fact is, all of these, you know, craft brewers that they're buying aren't even a drop in the bucket compared to their core brands.
Exactly. We're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars in brand equity and sales compared to,
like, hundreds of billions, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I'm making up numbers. But you know, and his point was that the strategy that ABI is using isn't to try to muscle in on the craft market. It is to use these craft breweries to better position the core brands, right?
Sure. Yep. And yeah, exactly.
And doing so with pricing. So they're trying to get the price of Budweiser closer to the price of craft beer. And then that somehow is going to, you know, have consumer minds stop equating Budweiser with cheapness, and I don't know. It's all consumer perception, right?
Right. It's basically marketing strategy, and it's going through things, consumer behavior. Yeah. He was using, like, the psychology. If you were, like, a big brand expert in, you know, getting your MBA, what you would try to do. And this is kind of a strategy to play defense, right? Like, they're basically buying these craft brands saying, hey, if you're going to buy craft, you know, buy our brands, but Budweiser is better. You know, Budweiser is still not better. But Budweiser, they can position it so that people will steer people to Budweiser, at least raise the value of that brand. Defensively,
right?
I think we, you need know, to like I said, before.
I read it twice, and it did make sense to me at the end. And I do think this guy has a very good point. It's a very interesting article. I recommend everybody read it. but I don't think it is 100%. You know, nothing's 100%, right? This isn't the only reason they're doing what they're doing. It's probably definitely part of it.
Right. And I do think that, and this has been kind of what I've always kept my eye out for, this craft beer bubble that everybody knows that we're in somehow, is price. So if you're, for example, Lagunitas, not an AB company, but a Heineken company, and you can start producing your beer much cheaper just because you have these gigantic facilities, or any Anheuser-Busch mainline craft beer that presumably they're doing at their big facilities, all of a sudden those costs per keg go way down and you can make a profit by selling your beer for less.
Yeah, but I'll be honest, you know, as someone who buys Lagunitas, strangely, their price has gone up.
Yeah.
They were always sort of undercutting the other craft brewers.
Okay.
Even when they were independent, they were known for the cheapest craft beer keg you could buy. But their price has only gone up under Heineken.
Sure.
So,
okay.
I had the same question to my Lagunitas rep. Aren't you guys supposed to be making this stuff cheaper?
Yeah.
I think in the end, they have to also produce a lot more profit than they used to.
Right.
You know, Tony,
to justify that sale price.
Tony, to his credit, you know, I don't think was, you know, well, he's a billionaire now, so you can't say he wasn't in it for the money, but, you know, I don't think he was driving around in a gold-plated Rolls Royce or anything. You know, he was happy, you know, growing the company and not necessarily making a you know, $1 billion a year or, you know, whatever. So now they have to do that. Now he's not in charge. He's not calling the shots. The numbers are going to Heineken, and they want to see some returns, so their prices are going up. Not by a ton, and they're still fairly you know, affordable in the craft beer world, but the prices have not gone down.
Sure. Yeah, and they've, I mean, I still think that's in my opinion, that's a sign that the bubble hasn't burst yet. In other words, they're still selling enough at the prices they can demand on the market, and maybe they always will. Maybe they'll push other breweries out instead, or maybe consumers are just willing to pay that premium price for the you know, better or higher quality beer, in my opinion. So maybe it'll never be an issue, but that's what I've always kept my eye on. When you see a really high quality beer where they're like, take this keg, like, please, you know, we're going to give it at a huge discount, then you'll know that they're in trouble selling it what they need
that
to sell.
That does, yeah, because no brewer wants to do that.
No. I mean, it kills your margins.
It does. Know? It kills your margin, and it kills your brand.
Yeah.
Because once you associate your beer with cheapness, well, that's what the perception of the consumer is.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to pull yourself out of that.
One of the cheapest pints I saw the last few years, it was a Chicago craft brewery pint. It was on special for a pretty, one of their higher quality beers for, I want to say $3 or $4. It was a $3 a pint special. It was a special where I had to, like, I remember it because it was pretty extreme, and they went out of business. So they're gone. And I was like, huh, you know, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
They were struggling, and that pricing kind of pushed that.
Right.
So, yeah.
They were just trying to get some money back.
Yeah.
You know, perception is important. I think another, when you talk about the bubble, the consumers will, you know, they're going to burst the bubble. And I think craft beer fatigue might be a big part of it, and I'm already seeing a backlash. You know, craft beer isn't cool anymore. It's not, you know. It's everywhere, and things that are everywhere aren't cool. And, you know, I think that's another way Budweiser and you know, ABI and all of them can sort of get people to go back to their retro brands,
mm-hmm.
is sort of by, you know, putting it out there everywhere. And once it's everywhere, it's not cool. You
right.
know, no one, if you, I hate to say it, but the coolest thing, the coolest beers out there are the ones you have to wait in line for and that are rare, right?
Yeah.
That's what all these people do. And those are the high demand beers. If you don't have to wait in line for quality craft beer, well, pseudo craft, whatever you want to call it, I think the mainstream consumer is going to go, you know, oh, what's cool now? The beer that people don't, you know, that mainstream people think isn't cool. And right now that's Budweiser.
Right. the hipsters will kind of flip over to these. Well, I believe when Miller Lite came out with their retro cans, their sales skyrocketed.
Yeah, High Life's through the roof, man. Yeah, High Life is through the roof. PBR is a very good example.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, they're expanding old that style onto a whole bunch of other retro brands. Yep. None of those beers taste good. They don't.
Yeah, right. Right, right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'll take a Budweiser over any of those beers. You know, but none of them are quality, you know. None of them are flavorful.
They're variations on the lager, the American lager.
And some of them are really bad,
and
really
some
bad.
Of them are quite bad.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, the that's a really good point. And I think that a lot of it's just supply and demand, like the proliferation of all the beer festivals and everything. It used to be that some beer festivals you had to buy immediately and that where they'd sell out. And now most of them you can buy right up leading to the events. And I think that just is another reflection of like they're everywhere and it's easy, you know, the demand isn't. When you don't know if you want to go, but when you know if you don't buy a ticket, you can't, then you're going to buy that ticket. So
right, right. You know, it's a catch 22.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know what the answer is. There probably is no answer. I've gotten a lot of shit for sort of being blasé about a lot of these takeovers and buyouts and stuff. And the fact that I still pour a beer like Lagunitas or Goose Island. And, you know, I remember a time when things were much more challenging for craft brewers than they are now. And, you know, this recent internet explosion about the South African hop controversy. So what happened was there was an importer of South African hops called, I think, ZA Hops or something. And they were cut off from the South African hop supply because it was being grown by Miller Coors. And Miller Coors is now part of ABI. And they that pretty much put this little guy out of business. And he sent out a letter to all of his customers saying, hey, I've been put out of business by the big guys. And they're not selling South African hops to me anymore. And you're not going to get it anymore. And, you know, people flipped out. And, you know, there's two sides to this story. One being his, which is, you know, Anheuser-Busch did this specifically to try to hurt the American craft brewers and keep ingredients from them, which is a big concern with American craft brewers. And that, you know, the other side is Anheuser-Busch saying, look, there was a poor hop crop in South Africa. And by the way, South Africa is not a hop monster region. Okay. This is not a lot of hops we're talking about. It's a very, very tiny drop in the bucket. But they had a couple of interesting new, you know, everyone's chasing the new hop varieties. But Anheuser-Busch basically said, look, it was a poor crop. We are supplying hops to South Africans' microbreweries, of which there were a couple hundred. And the rest we are sending to our new, you know, pseudo craft partners in America. And there just isn't enough for the rest of you. I'm sorry. And, you know, there's some validity to that. Here's the thing, you know, I get shit all the time for selling Lagunitas and Goose Island. Yet, everyone wants to be outraged because these small craft brewers, independent craft brewers in America, can't buy their ingredients from Miller Coors and Anheuser-Busch. So, you know, how come they get a pass and are allowed to source their ingredients, which aren't local, by the way? They're coming from fucking South Africa, right? You know, everyone talks about local beer. None of the ingredients going into this beer are local. You know, when you talk about a farm-to-table restaurant, that means that that food was produced in and around the region that that restaurant is in. When you talk about local craft beer, that just means that they bought the same ingredients that anybody else can get, and they just happen to put it all together and ferment it down the street. So how local is that? And how sustainable is craft beer if they are relying on the big guys for their ingredients, for the actual, you know, stuff that they turn into their product.
Yeah, and I mean, if I'm a small craft brewer and I was making a really great selling beer with one of these kind of newer hop varietals from the South Africa and I can no longer get it, I would be furious. So I understand their concern, but, you know, I also don't blame Anheuser-Busch. I mean, we know this throughout corporate American history. Business is kind of mean. People kind of, if you want to, and unfortunately, I mean, I think this is one of the reasons the underlying greatness.
Right. The craft beer business has always been an anomaly.
It's an anomaly. That's one of the reasons why people love it, is because you don't have to be a psychopath to hopefully create a successful business. Not that every successful business is a psychopath, but there is a high degree of correlation when you
just
do
the big ones.
Yeah, just the really
just
big
the successful ones.
Yeah, because you know they play hardball, they play mean, and you know. But when those business practices are and to be honest, craft beer in a lot of ways is beating Anheuser-Busch. So of course Anheuser-Busch and these big boys are going to strike back.
Yeah, they're not going to make it easy.
They're gonna make it tough. Yeah. And I'm actually surprised they haven't made it tougher already. I'm surprised they didn't make it tougher 10 years ago when you could see this giant wave coming.
Yeah, well, they were very short-sighted.
Yeah, so this is probably just the tip of the iceberg for these types of...
It probably is. Yeah. I have a feeling that the acquisition that everybody should have been freaking out about was the acquisition of Miller Coors when ABI went and bought them.
Yes.
I think is a much, much, much bigger deal than them buying Wicked Weed. I mean, this is the two largest brewing conglomerates in the world joining forces, and how they got it through all of the anti-monopoly laws, I have no idea. You know,
this
boggles my mind.
And this was, I'll give Jim Cook of Sam Adams credit, because if there's one thing he rails on, this is the one thing that he is railed on, even, and sometimes I think in maybe misguided for the point he's trying to make, but he's right. The underlying thing, I believe they control, and I'm making this up, so you'd have to fact check me on this, but it's like 70% of the beer market in the world is now one company.
It could be. It's 90% of the U.S. beer market.
Which is just mind-boggling when you think about the problems that entails from an anti-competitive.
And if there's anyone from Miller or ABI listening, they're going, well, no, we're still separated in the U.S., you know, blah, blah. Bullshit. You know, come on. what does that even mean? Whatever, you know. I think it's the bigger deal.
Yeah.
By far. And it's probably going to have more horrible effects on global beer than buying 10 Barrel Brewery or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and just speaking of that, they did come out that they are, and I think that this is, you know, going with the South African, this just kind of came up and was reminding me of the similar thing. What is one thing that everybody's worried about with big beer and how they're going to maybe go after or prevent the little guys, and it's distribution. Now there's a lot of laws in place to try to prevent that type of behavior. But it's a very contentious issue in its own right and for other independent reasons beyond that. But they did just announce they're spending $2 billion to invest in their brewing operations in the United States. And it's really meant a lot of it. It says here, this is an article in the Washington Post by Abha Batarahi from May 23rd.
Nice job with that name, Bruce. I think you have a future on Fox News. Man.
sorry about that. I'm not even drinking beer either. This is embarrassing. And it's used to, it says that they're not going to be used to acquire additional craft breweries, but they are going to, the money is going to be using money to expand brewing facilities for the ones they've already purchased and their distribution network. So, I mean, everybody else is on notice here. They're coming. That's not an insignificant sum of money. So it definitely kind of caught my eye.
The whole distribution thing is a whole nother podcast, isn't it?
Yeah. Real quick, did you read about Texas? We haven't talked about this off air.
No.
Texas just passed a law, like the whole craft beer scene was against it. And in a weird kind of, so in most states, it's a three-tiered model of distribution. So you have your brewers and your producers of whiskey or other alcohols, liquors, and then you have your distributors. And then you have your restaurants, bars, everything else.
The lowly third tier.
And so there's a lot of contentious between all the layers, and especially between the producers who just want to be able to sell it to consumers directly and those distributors who by law, a lot of times will be the ones who kind of take a slice of that.
Yes.
And so in Texas, they basically had a law. And I'm going to go general here because I don't know the exact barrel limits or the percentages. But basically, if you're over a certain size, then if you have a tap room or brew pub, you have to sell to a distributor in order to sell to your tap room or brew pub at your facility. So, of course, the brewers are beyond furious about this.
Wait a minute, even if it doesn't leave the house?
Even if it doesn't leave the house.
Holy shit.
They just are. And I don't know if it's signed. This is going through right now, this week. But it was approved by the legislature and everybody assumed that the governor would sign it in Texas. And of course, everybody's pushing all of the, like what the politicians are donated to by these distribution companies. And the big brewers, Anheuser-Busch, I believe was.
Well, they love it, I'm sure.
They were actually siding with, I believe, the craft brewers because a lot of their breweries are now impacted by this as well.
Oh, but yeah, they have gone in the tasting room business, yes.
And not only any of the breweries they bought down there, I forget them. One starts with a K, Krembo, or
yes, you're right. It's
anything they have is automatically hits that cap because they're all included. So
right.
So anyway, just thought that was interesting. And yeah, oh man,
that's a terrible law.
So that's another thing.
Reason not to go to Texas.
Yeah. Right.
Uh-oh, I'm messing with Texas over here. I better stop. That's all right. No one's listening from Texas.
Only Nate, my buddy, thanks for sending that text, encouraging text from California. I want a little shout out there. I don't know why. Man, I'm having a rough day.
You need a beer.
I know.
I need a beer.
Oh, man.
all right. Well, you know, the backlash is big. And in response to the backlash, a website called Brew Studs, which is a big blog thing. I don't, you know, what do you call these things anymore? Are they're not news sites? I don't know. We're a podcast. By the way, you know, I think maybe we're gonna need to have a mission statement or something. Remember when Chris Quinn was on? And he was like, "Wow, you guys just jump right into this. You don't have a mission statement or anything." And I was like, "A what now?" No, we're just bullshitting about beer.
Yeah, yeah. Beer opinions, man.
You know, a lot of people who have just been bullshitting about beer are now pretty big business. And I'm not saying Brew Studs are one of them. I don't know anything about them, but they put out a cutoff list, basically saying, you know, hey, for all of you who are confused about who is and who isn't owned by Anheuser-Busch, here is the definitive list so far of, you know, breweries that have a significant stake owned by Anheuser-Busch. And, you know, it's all the regular players here. I'm not going to go through them because we all, you know, anyone who's interested enough in beer to listen to this fucking podcast probably knows what they are. The interesting part I thought was the website cutoff.
Okay? Yeah.
So then they listed websites. Beer Opinions is not on it, so you don't have to cut us off. No one has to cut us off.
Yeah.
We're not on there.
But we are looking for big sponsorship money.
Yes.
So,
yes.
If, you know,
but if, on the down low, don't tell anyone. Yeah. but there, you know, there are beer websites like Brew Studs, you know, many, many successful beer sites that put out content every day, some bigger than others, you know, and they are they a blog? Are they a journalistic website? You know, sometimes it's hard to know. And this guy is making, you know, these guys are making a an attempt of letting you know that big beer is getting into the blogosphere.
Yeah, and this kind of goes into the, you know, Russians hacking the election on Facebook, fake news type of thing. It's not necessarily fake, but the concern is that the content that you think is a third-party independent content that's like, hey, this brewery has a great beer, it could be, just as an example, and it turns out that it was written by somebody paid by a big brewer like AB, and then but you have no idea. So it ends to the authority and of that brand and beer. So I think that's the big concern.
It's a fairly new, you know, it still boggles my mind that I can write something about beer or sit here and yap away about beer for an hour and anyone pays any attention or wants to even hear it. But they do.
Right.
And some other people have been very ingenious in the fact that they have doubled down in this area. I mean, I have a real job, you know. I run two restaurants. This is just something to keep my business partner off my back. Because he likes to get clicks on our website. So, yeah, maybe that's our mission statement. Good. Hi, welcome to Your Opinions. Our mission is to get a few more clicks on our website.
Yeah, I think that, yeah.
You know, yeah. Because my business partner...
you're contributing, you know?
wants more clicks, and I refuse to keep doing the blog because it's hard. The blogs are hard, man.
Oh, they take a long time to write.
Yeah, writing is hard.
Yeah.
Talking in this mic is easy. So,
especially when we can ramble.
Yes, which we might be doing now. It's all right. No one's listening. All right. So the websites that they've put on here, and I know I've read many things off of all of these websites, and we even quoted an article from one of those websites today. And those are the Beer Necessities, who I am familiar with. And they are saying that they it is entirely underwritten by AB InBev's division, the high end. I had no idea. October is a new one. And I was aware of this because it was kind of controversial when it came up. And it is a venture funded by AB InBev. It says they're Conde Nast and AB InBev's VC arm ZX Ventures. And that one is interesting because the executive producer is Good Beer Hunting, and the executive editor is a guy named Michael Kaiser, who you know, all of us in Chicago know, and whose website we earlier had talking about a very good article that was written concerning Wicked Weed. Next, he actually mentions Good Beer Hunting, and simply because Michael is involved in this October, and Good Beer Hunting was formerly paid by Anheuser-Busch to do consulting work. They made a movie called Grit and Grain. I don't know what else they've done for him. Grit and Grain was like the story of Bourbon County Stout. Great little movie, really well shot. Michael Kaiser is a fantastic photographer. I think that's what his background is. And quite frankly, Good Beer Hunting is a really, really nice, well put together website with articles that I read all the time.
Some of the best
and,
articles on beer.
Really good content. Yeah. Does this put this into doubt? Right? Does this? There's another one on there we have to mention: Beer Graphs, which I have seen. The Beer Graphs rating system is review staple and. The founder and editor, they're putting them on there too because the founder and editor is also involved in this October website, which is being funded by AB InBev. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, and so for my, so I, full disclosure, I actually went and met the founder and president of October. And I don't want to put words because I did not tell him.
So
I was,
Mike Raspatello?
Yeah, he's also a Michigan Wolverine. Go Blue. So good guy. Met him. Real nice guy. And again, I don't want to put words in his mouth. This kind of was mentioned in our conversation. And he did kind of say it's editorially. He claims that it's editorially independent. So and was very hard on that point. So I have no reason to doubt his sincerity there. And maybe we'll have him on at some point to further discuss or whatever.
Ooh, we could have him on the Beer Opinions.
Yeah. I think maybe my first guest or the first one I can find. But I think that the Beer Necessities, from what I understand, is a pure play, like editorial, like they're pushing their own brands.
If it's run by the high end. The high end division, by the way, is a new way to separate the sales force over at Anheuser-Busch and to make sure Anheuser-Busch isn't mentioned in their name. And they strictly deal with the craft acquisitions that Anheuser-Busch had. Shock Top was included in the high end division, and then I think they realized too many people know Shock Top is made by Anheuser-Busch, so yeah. It's no longer a part of it.
that sunglass wearing the sun, you know, just smiling at me, being like, "You're an idiot."
Yes.
Right.
So this is interesting. Yeah. I know Michael Kaiser personally.
Yep.
I've only been in one Twitter fight in my life. It was with Michael Kaiser. He is a very
Twitter
controversial.
Fight.
Yeah, Twitter fight. He called one of my blog posts bullshit. and God forbid I take any criticism sitting down. So he's a very controversial figure here in Chicago because of his affiliation with AB and with a whole list of breweries, which, then he also has a, very well-read, well-done website and podcast and all this stuff that any casual observer would say this is an independent, non-for-profit, passion project or something.
Right.
Apparently it is not. It is a... It's for profit and is paid, content in some respects. Maybe we get Michael Kaiser on here.
Yeah. That'd be a great guest. Yeah.
But, it's funny that, it definitely means that the big guys are paying attention, right? And they are trying to get into what made craft beer this juggernaut, and a lot of that is online. A lot of it is blogs and podcasts and all this stuff.
Yeah. This last boom from this last chunk of time for the last 10 to 15 years, really 5 years or so in Chicago, it's been right in this digital age. So it makes total sense that the two go hand in hand in a lot of ways from that. So absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, it's all marketing, right? And if you can market your product to people that, to the hipsters that don't realize they're being marketed to, that helps, right?
It's authenticity. I mean, in content marketing has been on the lips of every marketing person for years now, which is kind of what this is getting at, where, it's blog posts, it's everything else.
It's what we're doing right now.
It's what we're doing right now.
Right? I mean,
by the way, you guys should take a beer tour.
That's right. So what's new with the beer tour you got going on there, Bruce?
Man, it'd be great to talk about all this stuff on having some nice frosty beers.
Here live at Kaiser Tiger, 1415 West Randolph, heart of West Loop. Maybe you've seen my other place, Patty Long's, 1028 West Loop. I mean,
At least we're unashamed about it, though.
We're unashamed hucksters.
And we're pretty honest. We're not trying to be like, this is a travel podcast, beer or bar podcast that is, and then just drop our names in it. But we should start that.
Because that good beer hunting is really, quite honestly, in a much nicer podcast than ours. Yeah, so we should probably take a page out of his book. You know, he's been at war with the other podcasts that I'm on, the Beer Temple podcast. I'm not gonna drag them into this, but Ed Marr over at Marr's Brewery, friend of ours and a very outspoken hipster. I'm gonna say hipster. He's the king hipster. He's sent me a Facebook note the other day. It just said, "Congrats, baby." It was for the anniversary of Kaiser Tiger. He calls me baby. So he's a great dude, but he hates Michael Kaiser's guts, and they have been going at it left, right, and center. No one looks good in any of that. It's all silly pettiness, but I think it is in this age of fake news, and I don't want to get into politics, but when we're consuming everything newsworthy on our phones, I think it is imperative that we figure out who wrote what.
Know the source. And it's hard.
I remember when my business partner Chris first made me write a blog. He's like, "You gotta have a blog. We had a blog on the website. Stuart wants a blog. You get the hits with a blog. Write a blog." And I'm like, "Man, I don't even know what a blog is, dude. I don't know what a blog is." Well, it turned out I read them all the time. They're the little things I click on Facebook. Those are blogs. I know. Yeah. Stuart, I said earlier that I'm not a very smart person. Okay. we need to be careful. Although at the same time, do we? Who fucking cares? It's just beer. It's not electing a demagogue.
This isn't peace in the Middle East.
It's not the presidential race.
Yeah.
It's probably not that important. But hey, there it is. Right.
Beer opinions.
All right. I think we've beaten this horse.
Yeah.
What you got going on, Bruce? What's happening?
Just rocking and rolling. Hired some new tour guides. So we've had a couple tour guide happy hours. So getting the crew all together. And
This is a high time, huh?
Summer season. Yeah, yeah. So it's been a great year to start, April and May. And it's looking good for the, coming down. So definitely can check out the three tours are fully operational.
Awesome.
And how about you?
Same thing, getting ready for the summer and all that goes with it. The beer garden here at Kaiser, hired 10 people here last week.
Sweet.
All ramped up.
I got to give you a shout out. I was here for Mother's Day. They had that crawfish boil. And it was just a great day.
Yes, we will have to shout out to the Mid-City Yacht Club in New Orleans, who we've talked about before. Boris and MJ and the master, George Poole, drove 300-something pounds of crawfish up here and proceeded to boil them in our beer garden, and they are the best. And they actually do listen to this podcast.
So. Yeah, they're super nice. I got the opportunity to meet them, and they're just awesome. Yeah. I'm going down there in the fall. Looking forward to stopping by.
Get to the Mid-City Yacht Club. Cleanest draft lines in New Orleans. That's a fact.
Awesome.
If we get this out in time, next Friday, which is, what's the date on that?
June 2nd.
We will be releasing my annual collaboration beer with Pig Minds. It's called Monchichi Throwdown, and it is a Mexican corn lager. Super light, super refreshing. We use a little bit of lime zest in there, and that will be a double release here at Kaiser and at Patty Long's. Carson, the brewmaster over there, good friend of mine, him and I will be here first, probably about 6, 7 o'clock at Kaiser, and then we're going to Uber it on over to Patty Long's. It should be, should be a humdinger.
That's awesome. I like the double release. Constellation Brands, you're on notice. Another Mexican lager. I like it.
That's right. Corona's going down.
That's awesome.
All right. I want to thank everybody, as always, for listening. Please leave your comments, complaints, compliments, all of those things at our website. And look forward to our next edition.
All right. Have a great start to summer, everybody.
She's so-